Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. And you listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
Welcome back to Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM. We're going to stick with the college basketball talk, but we're going to move away from JUCO and talk NCAA. Now, this is the time of the year. I mean, conference tournament's off and rolling. Selection Sunday's not that far off, and we've begun the March to Madness. That's the perfect segue to bring in our next guest, Greg Peterson. He's kind enough to join us every March. He joins us during the college basketball season as well from time to time. Greg is the co-host of the March to Madness on SiriusXM Radio Channel 204, and he's joining us right now over the phone. Greg, it's always a pleasure to get you on. Thank you.
Happy to be on with you, Jordan. Thank you.
Yeah, always look forward to the conversations. And as far as March Madness goes, I mean, boom, we're here. There's no more of the, I don't want to call it the charade, but at the same time, there's a lot of meaningless basketball throughout the season. That's not the case anymore. Every single possession counts now when you get down to it in March Madness.
Oh, exactly. You've got so many teams fighting for a chance to go to the NCAA tournament, so many teams on the bubble. And then you've got the smaller schools playing in these one-bid leagues that are just fighting for that chance to get that 15 or 16 seed. You've got to love what you see.
Let me be honest with you. One of my problems that I've always had in college basketball is the conference tournaments. I'm not a big conference tournament guy. I wish they would award the automatic bid to the conference outright winner. I think it would give us a bigger gauge of the 68 best teams in the conference or in the NCAA tournament. But let's be real. That diminishes some of the drama that we get in March if the conference tournaments didn't pack that heavy punch. With that being said, right now in the state of Utah, we can start by talking about the BYU Cougars going toe-to-toe with Gonzaga for the WCC title. BYU is one of those squads that is a potential bid stealer in tonight's game.
They certainly are. RPI is 67. They lost a couple games in conference to the likes of Pacific and Loyola Marymount that they should not have, so this is going to be a very big game for the Cougars. And you take a look at it, they were just absolutely rolling against St. Mary's. St. Mary's allowed a season-high point total. It was 85 yesterday. And you could just see from the outstretch, BYU was just locked in, ready to go. Got Jock Landale to foul three times in the first half, which is what really pushed them over the top in this one after a less-than-stellar performance in their first game of the WCC tournament against San Diego.
You talk about finding your groove at the right time. That spells BYU, Greg.
Oh, exactly. I mean, this is a BYU team that, I mean, Jock Landale was eating them for breakfast, lunch, and dinner before. He was averaging like 31.5 points and 12.5 rebounds per game against them. And then, lo and behold, BYU shows up last night. They're hitting their threes. They just came out. They punched St. Mary's in the mouth, and the Gaels had no response.
Now, looking ahead in this contest for BYU going toe-to-toe with Gonzaga, I mean, all in all, this is Gonzaga's game to lose. I think everybody views it that way. Do you view BYU as a legitimate threat to win this conference championship tonight?
I mean, you have to take them very seriously because you take a look at some of the players that BYU has. I mean, Childs was just absolutely insane yesterday, scoring 33 points. I will say Gonzaga's front court is a little bit deeper than St. Mary's because St. Mary's, you got Jock Landale, and then you have a whole lot of nothing. With Gonzaga, you've got the likes of Killian Tilly. You've got Jonathan Williams down low. So you've got some guys that you can work with, and they're also very versatile. Jock Landale, more of a back-to-the-basket guy. Killian Tilly in the WCC tournament is 10 for 10 from three, and over his last five games has hit 19 of 22 from distance. Those are video game numbers right there. So, I mean, BYU is going to have its hands full with just the versatility of Gonzaga, but at the same time, this team does have experience. These are a bunch of older guys that are going out there. I think that they've got a good chance of, at the very least, hanging in there with the Zags.
Yeah, I agree with you, and a lot of that just has to go off of straight momentum. I mean, you go back to the game against St. Mary's. BYU shot something like 61%, 62% in the first half of that contest. I don't care who you're going up against. It does not matter. If you shoot upwards of 60% and a half, Greg, you are going to hang with whoever you're playing. I don't care who it is.
Very true, and you take a look at BYU as well, they're good at not turning the ball over. That's a huge thing when you're going up against a better opponent. If you don't turn the ball over, you don't give away those free opportunities in transition, you're going to be able to set up your defense, and you're going to be able to just allow yourself to not get blown out of the game, more or less.
Again, we're being joined right now by Greg Peterson. Again, he's the co-host of the March to Madness on Sirius XM Radio Channel 204. One conference that we obviously pay close attention to here on KOAL, the Pac-12. Have Stanford in there. I think Stanford's a team that really could make a big run of the Pac-12 tournament. You want to talk about a team that's had problems throughout the year with injuries? Boom, that's Stanford. I also think this team has all kinds of potential, and that's the squad that I'm watching in the Pac-12 tournament. I think that they could potentially give out the most heartache here over the next couple of days.
Yeah, very true. You take a look at the Stanford team. They were banged up in the early part of the year. That's why they lost to Portland State in the PK-80 on a neutral court. That obviously did not help them. They were blown out by North Carolina at the beginning of the year. But this team really rounded into form, and what I can tell from Stanford is this is a second-half team right here. Now, they didn't show that against Arizona State a couple days ago, but they were able to hold on for that win. But I just still remember when they went up against USC and UCLA in that early stretch of the Pac-12 season, they were down in those games by double digits. They managed to fight back. They obviously got a little bit of luck with that 50-footer that I think Dejon Davis hit against USC. But at the same time, this is a Stanford team that will not stop battling and have a bona fide star in Reed Travis.
I agree 100%, and in fact, if we take a look at the Pac-12 slate tomorrow, we get Colorado, Arizona State, Stanford, Cal, Washington, Oregon State, Oregon going up against Washington State. Out of those four games that we'll get tomorrow, Greg, which one do you like the best?
I like the Arizona State versus Colorado game. You may recall that the Buffaloes were able to take down Arizona State in Boulder the first time these two teams met, and contrary to popular belief, Arizona State is not a lock for the NCAA tournament, in my opinion. This is a team with an RPI of 58, three quadrant one wins, and went 8-10 in the Pac-12. That just is not going to get the job done in for me if they lose to Colorado. Because if they lose to Colorado, their RPI is probably going to jump into the mid to late 60s. They're still going to have those three quadrant one wins. It's going to be another less than stellar loss on their resume. So I think that there's a lot of intrigue here with the Sun Devils.
Okay, let me talk about the Utah Utes here. How close are they to getting into the NCAA tournament? What do they got to do over the course of the Pac-12 tournament to at least get the selection committee to consider them as one of the first four or the final four in?
Right now I've got Utah somewhere in the neighborhood of my fourth or fifth team out, depending on when you look, but Utah really needs to get a couple wins. I mean, the fact that we're talking about the number three team in the Pac-12 being among my first four out is a little bit weird, because we remember last year just how good the top four teams in the Pac-12 were. And everyone likes to sell the narrative that, oh, Nebraska is the fourth best team in the Big Ten. They should be in the NCAA tournament. How about the third best team in the Pac-12? I mean, Utah's played some good basketball. They obviously had a little bit of a letdown when they played against USC at home a couple weeks ago. But at the same time, Utah has actually scheduled pretty well out of conference. They had some mixed results. Obviously, the loss to Butler is right now nipping them in the butt. But I mean, Utah's a team that I certainly think is a game opponent, and if they're able to make their Pac-12 final, I think that it's hard to leave them out.
I agree with you. When you look at what Utah's been able to accomplish throughout the year, I mean, Justin Bibbins, David Collette, Cedric Bearfield, Tyler Rawson. Look, there's four kids that have the ability to go off at any given time. Typically, in a one-and-done type scenario, you don't want to play against a team that has five guys that average double figures, and Utah floats around that water. I mean, this is a dangerous team.
This is a very dangerous team. I do agree with you. I mean, Justin Bibbins has been such a nice player. Graduate transfer from Long Beach State. He's really given this team a nice spark. You've got David Collette as well, one of the better full post players in the Pac-12. Utah does have a little bit of a rebounding issue, but this team is one of the teams that shoots a lot of threes. I mean, it's hard to believe Utah being one of those teams that a lot of its shots do come from distance, but when they're hitting those shots, it's really hard to knock off the Utes.
You mentioned the next four out, first four out. Okay, you have Utah on that list right now. ESPN.com is saying Mississippi State, Marquette, Notre Dame. Hard to argue those four, isn't it?
Very hard. I have all those teams currently among my first six teams out myself. I think I might have Mississippi State at number seven, but I have them all right in that vicinity.
Okay, let's talk about who's on the bubble that you have as far as your last four in right now. And again, speaking of the Pac-12, and you're mentioning the fact that the number three seed in the Pac-12 right now would not be in. Obviously, USC is floating on the bubble, even though they're the number two seed in the Pac-12, right? I mean, it's not a for sure thing for USC, is it?
For me, USC is in stone cold lead pipe lock. Other
okay.
People see it the other way. I mean, I thought that when USC knocked off Utah, they cemented their place into the field of 68. This is a USC team that challenged itself out of conference. They got the tournament win in Hawaii in the Diamondhead Classic, knocking off New Mexico State in the process. I mean, obviously the win against Akron is nothing to write home about, but that win against Middle Tennessee keeps looking better and better. Middle Tennessee, one of the better mid-majors in the country. So I think that USC has done enough to get itself into the field of 68, even though many may disagree with me.
Again, Greg Peterson joining us right now as we talk NCAA Conference Tournament action ahead of Selection Sunday. Greg, give me the most intriguing conference from here on out that you must watch over the course of the next 3 to 4 days.
I would say it's the ACC because you've got so many big, heavy matchups going on that it's not even funny. You've got teams jockeying for a position on the bubble. Will Syracuse be able to get in? Will Louisville be able to get in? What is the likelihood that Duke gets a one seed if they win the ACC tournament? Where will North Carolina be seeded? There's just so much there with the ACC and so many good teams. And meanwhile, you've got a good mix of bubble teams in there as well.
Who's the most interesting player heading into the NCAA tournament? The guy that is going to help his draft stock the most here over the next, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks?
That is a good question. You take a look at some of these guys. I mean, one guy that really jumps off the page for me is Jalen Brunson. I mean, this is a guy that should be considered for player of the year. 19 points, somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 rebounds, 5 assists per game. He shoots at nearly 50% from 3. And let's be clear here. He is the heart and soul of Villanova. The guy plays so hard. I mean, Villanova is not the deepest team to start with. They were dealing with an injury to Phil Booth, one of their starting guards, and he just picked up the slack for them. So I take a look at Jalen Brunson having a huge mark and just everyone being enamored by him.
I like that you bring up Brunson because, look, I think this kid is fantastic. I really do. But every single time I have a conversation with someone that follows the NBA, they have him on the outside of their top 20 in the NBA draft, and I disagree with that wholeheartedly. And maybe a lot of it has to do with the fact that he is a junior, and I know the age, there's so much emphasis placed on age in this day and age as far as the NBA draft goes. He's the smartest player in college basketball.
I completely agree with you. I think that age has just been so overblown in college basketball, or at the NBA, because it's like, if a guy is below the age of 20, he's ancient. He has no upside or anything like that. Meanwhile, you take a look at a lot of these guys that do come out as juniors or seniors. Typically, they may not boom and become the next Steph Curry because he was just a once-in-a-lifetime guy. But at the same time, a lot of these guys are often very solid, and I feel like the bust rate with them is much lower.
Greg, last question before I let you go. You mentioned the conference to watch. We talked a little bit about the Pac-12. Let's end with this. Who wins the Pac-12 tournament?
The Pac-12 tournament, you have to go with Arizona. I know that they're playing such bad defense, but at the same time, I just don't see a team like a UCLA, like a Stanford, just having enough in the arsenal to knock off this Wildcat squad. DeAndre Ayton is just playing out of his mind. I mean, that game against Oregon was so special. I mean, the Ducks might be a little bit of a sleeper, but at the same time, I just still go with Arizona. And when Raleigh Olkins is healthy, this Arizona team is completely different. He appears to be healthy. I think Arizona takes the whole shebang.
Last question about the Pac-12. As far as UCLA goes, and looking at where this team is at, look, they've had several disappointing performances so far this season. Several times I've tuned in to watch UCLA, Greg, and I've been highly, highly disappointed. Steve Alford, does he save his job with the recruiting class that he has coming in next season?
I think he should. I mean, especially the fact that he has now washed his hands clean of the Ball brothers. I think that's actually a little bit of an advantage for him. So I think that Steve Alford gets at least another year. And what so many people forget about UCLA is, since Steve Alford has been there, this is now year number 4, they made the Sweet 16 in 2 out of those 3 years. Now, granted, they got lucky when they got matched up with SMU a couple years ago and got into the tournament just seemingly by the will of the committee. But at the same time, a Sweet 16 appearance is a Sweet 16 appearance.
Is that still one of the most high-profile jobs in the country?
I believe so, without a doubt.
Again, Greg Peterson taking out the time to join us. Greg, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Certainly. You can find me on Twitter @2Unit_81, and you can follow the Vegas Stats and Information Network at VSIN Live. I've been doing a little bit of everything for them, some write-ups. I'm on the March of Madness, which airs every day from 3 to 4 p.m. Mountain Time, so be sure to catch me there.
Hey, Greg, it's always a pleasure to get you on. Hopefully we can do it after Selection Sunday.
Yes, sir. We'd love nothing more.
He's the man, Greg Peterson, one of the best college basketball minds you will find. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back, put the final touches on this edition of the show when we return.